Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200 for Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. All righty, then. Let's see. We are here, and I want to talk with, it's interesting, it's the beginning of the year, and a lot of people want to, you know, obviously you think about doing your taxes, you think about your finances for the coming year, and someone to help you out, and she's got 12 smart financial moves that you can make now in January at the start of the new year to help you do the best you can with your finances throughout 2018. And our guest is Kim Langford. She is a contributing editor for Kiplinger's Personal Finance. And she writes the Ask Kim column for Kiplinger's, and is a finance specialist and has been doing this for many years. And we're going to talk about those 12 smart moves that you can make here at the beginning of the year to keep you okay financially for 2018 and do the best you can. And let's welcome Kim to the show. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Right. Tell me how long you've been doing this. You've been doing the personal finance thing and answering these questions with your Ask Kim column. How long have you been doing this?
I have been doing it for just over 20 years. I think it's about the 21st anniversary of my working with Kiplinger's.
Wow.
And I love doing this column because I get to hear from readers directly and find out exactly what they're hoping to do and what their questions are.
Wow. And when did you get into finance? Was it always something that you were interested in?
I right after college, pretty much. I got my first financial writing job, and then a few years later went to Kiplinger's, and it's just a wonderful place to work. Lots of people have been there for a really long time, and just an excited group of people who are really into what they're doing and really, really love learning about finances, talking with all the experts, and helping out our readers.
And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about some of your recent entries for your column, Ask Kim. And then, of course, you know, the main thing here is we want to talk about those 12 smart moves that you can make here at the beginning of the year that'll help you throughout the year. But, you know, you said you've been writing this column and being a part of it for 21 years. What are some of the most common questions that you get from people that need help financially? What are some of the most common ones?
Well, it's really interesting to see about the aging of some of our readers. A lot of the questions when I first came about 20 years ago, and this was before, you know, eBay and before everyone had the internet so accessible, they would ask a lot of questions about collectibles, and they would find things in their attic, and they'd ask how much it was worth, and then I would need to talk to experts and look up resource guides, and now everyone could do that on their own. But a lot of people have been asking about signing up for Medicare, about IRA, required minimum distributions. A lot of people have questions about just all kinds of ways to save for retirement. And, of course, with the new tax law, that's going to keep us really busy because
yeah.
A lot of people have questions about how that's going to impact their personal finances at pretty much any age. So it's really interesting to see how all the events in the news affect their questions. And just as they get older and closer to retirement and go through these various life changes, they always have some questions about how to make the most of their financial situation.
Is it tough? Is it a challenge, Kim, to keep it kind of simple for people? Because I think a lot of people, I mean, myself included, can find these financial questions and these situations and what's going on intimidating. And some people aren't really great with money and aren't really great with understanding finances and how complicated they can be. How do you go about making it simple so that people aren't intimidated?
Well, and that is our main goal. Our main goal is to translate some of these really complicated topics into understandable terms that people can actually take action on. And so a lot of times, you know, when I will find an accountant or an actuary or a financial planner who really understands these complicated issues and can explain them well, they end up being some of my great go-to sources because a lot of these things are so complicated, but
yeah.
They really affect almost everybody in their lives. And so to be able to explain that to people, that's our main goal, is to be able to explain things in a really non-intimidating way that people can actually start to use right away and benefit from.
Well, that's the way you got to do it. I mean, it really is. It's so complicated. And now with all this technology and all of these ways for people to, you know, steal your identity, and sometimes your money is not safe on the web, that must make it even more challenging, right, Kim?
It does. And, you know, especially this last year with all the data breaches, readers have all kinds of questions about how to protect their identity, whether to freeze their credit, all those steps. It's interesting, though, because the Internet, on the other hand, has helped readers ask more interesting questions. You know, several years ago, many years ago when I started, they would have sometimes real basic questions about finances. And now they can find the answers to those pretty easily on the Internet. But then they have the next level questions. They have questions. In fact, they did a column this week about follow-up questions from readers about their IRA required minimum distributions. And they know the basic rules, but a lot of times they'll have some real specific questions about their own situation. And you'll realize a lot of other people are in those situations as well. So a lot of times I'll end up doing some follow-up columns after I hear from readers that say, well, you know, I understand the basics, but what about this and what about that? And they have such great questions.
Great. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about some of your Ask Kim columns from recent, but let's get into this 12 smart financial moves for the new year. Tell me about why you put this together.
Well, it's just January is just a great time after you've, you know, finished with a holiday and New Year's rush to just kind of sit down and take stock of where all of your financial issues stand. And also it's a good time, you know, you might be snowed in to be able to take advantage of that time to do some financial house cleaning too. And sometimes a lot of these things that may seem like a chore can actually save you money for the rest of the year, really help you kind of figure out if you're on track and what you need to do to make some changes and make the most of some of the new contribution limits for your IRAs and 401ks, as well as just, you know, make sure that your investments are where you hope that they should be for your future.
Well, let's go down these 12 things. You've got number one would be cut insurance premiums. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, especially auto insurance is one of the major expenses that people have every month. And especially if you have a teenage driver, this is just a very, very large cost that you're paying regularly. And anything you can do, and I recommend at least once a year, just taking a look at what your coverage is, making sure that you're getting credit for all the discounts you deserve. That is one of the easiest ways to get a break on your coverage. Ask your insurance company or your agent what some of the discounts are that your insurer offers. And let them know, for example, if your child may not have had a B average when you added them to their policy, but now they would qualify for a good student discount. Or, for example, if you have low mileage or have changed a job and have a much, much shorter commute, you may be able to get a low mileage discount. Also, it's a good time just to, you know, spend a few minutes and shop around, see if another insurer might be offering you a better rate. But before you switch, go back to your own insurer and tell them what they offered you. And many times, we did a survey of our readers, actually, about a year ago, and they said that many times their insurer would offer to match their rate or reduce their rate in order to keep them as a good customer. So just a lot of things you can do, and even if you're just, you know, saving a few hundred dollars here or there, that can really add up.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, how about review your beneficiaries?
This is another thing that is, you know, it's a chore to do, but it's just something good to do at least once a year and whenever you have any life changes. Because a lot of people don't realize that even if your will is totally up to date, it's your beneficiary designations on your IRAs, your life insurance, any other retirement savings, that supersedes anything you've written in your will. So you may have updated your will when you got married, for example, but you may not have updated your beneficiaries. And in that case, your IRA, for example, may not go to your spouse. So you really need to just go take a look while you're in your, a lot of times you can just take a look online and just make sure that those beneficiary designations are up to date.
That's a good piece of advice, because I think people might think, well, you know, my will is up to date, everything is good.
Right. A lot of people just don't realize that they're two totally separate issues.
Right. Okay. And of course, number three on your list is protect your identity, which there are many ways to do that now.
And that is right. And, you know, after the major breaches last year, a lot of people were interested in credit freezes. And we've got the whole step-by-step how you can initiate a credit freeze with the major credit bureaus. And you'd need to go to Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And many times you have to pay to initiate the freeze and pay to lift the freeze unless you have been a victim of identity theft. And it's just, you know, there's so many issues about identity identity theft and what people could do to protect themselves. And this is just a really good time to both take a look at your, you know, if you haven't already gotten your annualcreditreport.com, go to annualcreditreport.com and get your credit report from those three major credit bureaus, and just make sure there's nothing suspicious on there. Yeah. If there is, that's a good time to check and make sure nobody's trying to steal your identity. And while you're at it, you'll take a look and see if your credit is on track to be able to qualify for some good rates and qualify for all the benefits of having a good credit record.
Yeah, when we talk about consumer issues on the show here pretty regularly, the identity theft thing comes up, and the credit freeze thing has been a popular target whenever we talk about that.
It is, you know, it's a really good way to help protect your identity. I mean, it would prevent lenders from issuing credit to someone who is not you. They really need to get your permission before they can actually review that credit report and then offer the credit. And people need to understand pros and cons, though, because a lot of times there are people in addition to lenders that review your credit, and you need to find out, for example, and this varies a lot from state to state, the rules for if insurers, when they're offering your premiums, if they need to review your credit, and if you're going to have to lift that freeze in order for them to review that. I did a column about that for the last issue of the magazine, and a lot of other key things like that. So just, it's a really good time, first of all, to investigate the pros and cons to doing that freeze, and then find the steps if you're interested in doing it.
Here's an interesting one. Sign up for an online Social Security account. People didn't even know that they could do that.
And this is something that people of all ages should consider doing, and not just if you're, you know, close to Social Security age. But even if you're younger, if you go to ssa.gov/myaccount and you sign up for an online Social Security account, you can, first of all, get in the account and see what you're on track to receive from Social Security. And this would be as if your income were to remain about the same through the years, you know, be increased for inflation, but just to see what you could qualify for. Also, it's a great opportunity to take a look at what Social Security has as your earnings from each year, because I've actually talked with a lot of readers who have gone in there and they found some mistakes in their amount of earnings that reported, and they weren't getting credit for all the money that they'd earned through the year. So, you know, a lot of times just take a look in there, see if something seems off. You may need to provide some documentation from past earnings to Social Security to get that cleared up, but it's just a really good time to go in there, and gives you just a good idea of what you may receive in the future.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, Kim, and we'll go through more of these ways that you can improve your finances in the new year and smart moves, and talk a little bit more about the Ask Kim columns. Okay, hold on a second. Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay, Kim Langford is with us, contributing editor at Kiplinger's Personal Finance. And you can check out Kiplinger.com for more information. We have a link on our Facebook page at Facebook.com/NickDShow. All right, we will take a quick break and be back after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Our guest right now is Kim Langford. She is a contributing editor at Kiplinger's Personal Finance. She writes the column Ask Kim and helps people out. Talk a little bit about her Ask Kim column. You can check out Kiplinger.com for more information. You can also check it out on our Facebook page, where we have links and information, Facebook.com/NickDShow. We were in the middle of talking about the 12 smart financial moves that you can make now at the start of the new year to keep your finances in order and get better for 2018, and we welcome Kim back to the show. Kim, welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
All right. We were going through this list. Number five is boost your retirement savings contributions. Talk a little about that.
Well, the beginning of the year is also a great opportunity to see if you can even add just a little bit extra money to your retirement savings. And if you have a 401k through work or a 403b, 457 plan, the money is going to be taken out of your paycheck before you even see it. So if you had gotten a raise at the end of the year, this might be a good time to say, you know, I can afford to contribute a little bit more, and I won't even realize the money is gone because I haven't gotten used to seeing it yet. The other key thing is in 2018, the limits for 401k, 403b, 457 contributions rose about $500 to $18,500 for the year. And if you're 50 or older, and that's if your 50th birthday can be even later on in the year, but as long as you're 50 sometime during this calendar year or older, you can add an extra $6,000 in catch-up contributions. Also, don't forget about IRAs. The contribution levels remain the same, but it's $5,500. $2,500 for everyone, unless you're 50 or older, then you can contribute $6,500. Just a good time to see if you can even just contribute a little bit more than the previous year, and just keep adding that up for tax advantage savings for the future.
That's smart. About make a charitable giving plan.
Well, and this is something that a lot of people are really interested in, how the new tax law is going to impact their strategies for giving to charities. On the one hand, with so many disasters over the past year, people became really interested in helping out and trying to figure out how to research charities, how they could afford to help give money to some of the victims of the wildfires and the hurricanes, and just, you know, all of the things that they've seen and realizing that they really want to help out. On the other hand, the new tax law has doubled the standard deduction, which means that a lot of people will no longer be itemizing their taxes when they file their tax returns, and as a result may not be taking the charitable deduction. So you need to, on one hand, think about tax-wise, you know, how is the new tax law going to impact whether or not you're going to take that charitable deduction? But on the other hand, think about what you do want to do to be able to help out, and maybe start to research some charities that you might be interested in, instead of just waiting till that year-end crush that people have. One thing a lot of our readers are taking IRA required minimum distributions. This is for people who are over 70 and a half. And an interesting thing that is not impacted by the new tax law is they can make a tax-free transfer, and they've been able to do this for the past few years, from their IRA to the charity, and it counts as their required minimum distribution, but is not included in their taxable income. And that's just an interesting thing that a lot of our readers continue to be interested in, because that is a strategy for giving to charity that isn't impacted by the new tax law.
You know, it's interesting, and this ties in with one of your recent Ask Hims, and that is to make sure, you know, you're going to be filing your taxes here. And you wrote a piece about making sure that you have proof to support your charitable tax deductions. This is important.
And that's why this time of year, it can be also a little confusing, too, because the tax law that changed about the doubling the standard deduction and changing people's strategies for charitable giving applies to 2018 and beyond. We're all working on our 2017 taxes and getting all those records together and everything. And, in fact, I just needed to make a call yesterday to a charity. They had not given me all the records that I needed in order to document my contribution for taxes. So, you know, even now, this is the time of year that you're going to be getting those receipts from charities that said, thank you for your contribution. Make sure that it has, you know, the date that you gave the contribution, the amount that you gave. For contributions, you know, over $500, make sure it says no goods and services received in return. There's just a lot of real specifics, but you've got to make sure that you've got those records, because I've talked with a lot of accountants, and they say that, you know, if the IRS does audit you and you don't have those records from before the tax filing date, that you're not going to be able to take those deductions. So just make sure that you've got all those ducks in a row before you file your taxes.
And you can always, like you just said, you made a call to get proof or a receipt or the paperwork that you need to prove that indeed you did make a charitable contribution. So just because you don't have it now, you can call these places and get what you need.
That's right. And, you know, when I was talking with an accountant for this, he said the key thing is that those need to be dated before the tax filing deadline. So it doesn't have to be immediately after you gave the money. The receipt didn't have to be from, you know, before December 31st, although your contribution needed to be made then.
Yeah.
But really, take these next few months to gather those records.
Yeah, that's good. And then this is a good time at the beginning of the year to review your portfolio, correct?
This is, and especially, you know, after the big run-up in stocks over the last year, a lot of people need to make sure that they're still, that their portfolio is still balanced in the way that they wanted it to be. For example, if you had started out wanting to have, you know, 60% in stocks and 40% in bonds, you may have a lot more on the stock side now than you had originally expected, and that means that your portfolio could be a bit more risky for the future than expected. So this may be a good time to rebalance your portfolio, get things back in line based on your investing time frame and risk tolerance, and you may, you know, need to either sell some of your winners, or you may need to, if you're in a 401k and having regular contributions coming in, you may want to devote some more of your new contributions in into the side that isn't represented as much right now. So just take a look and see, you know, how that balances out and whether you need to make some changes.
And this is a good time to gather and toss tax records at the beginning of the year?
This is a perfect time. So right now is the time that you're going to be getting your W-2s and your 1099s from your employers and from your financial institutions. So you're gathering all of that information. And then meanwhile, keep in mind that generally the IRS has up to 3 years after the tax filing deadline to initiate an audit. And so that means that after you file those taxes and after, the April 15th, April 17th, which varies depending on weekends, you can go through some of your old tax records from more than 3 years ago and see what you might be able to keep and toss. We usually recommend keeping your tax return as long as possible. You can keep a copy of that online. You can just keep the copy of the paper copy. You don't necessarily need to keep all of those receipts and canceled checks and things like that. But the tax return itself can provide a lot of clues to things that you may need in the future. So, when you're going through those records, don't just throw them all away. You can throw away a lot of them, but make sure to think about what you may need to keep for future taxes as well.
Yeah, I need to purge a little bit, Kim. I've got files that go back to 1999, so I need to I think get rid of some.
I have quite the archives in my closet
too.
It's easy to say that it's a good time to toss and keep, but a lot of times I tend to keep way more just
in case. Me too, Kim. Listen, it was a real delight talking to you, and everybody can read the rest of the 12 Smart Financial Moves at kiplinger.com. We have a link on our Facebook page. Really great advice. Some things here that I didn't even think of, and I know that you're helping people out by doing what you're doing, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Okay, take care.
Thanks.
There you go. Kim Lankford, contributing editor to Kiplinger's Personal Finance. She writes the column Ask Kim, and that 12 Smart Financial Moves that you make right here in January, the beginning of the year, the entire article is available at kiplinger.com, and I suggest you check it out. All right, we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.